I'd like to call the meeting together for the CFA and also indicate that we do have a quorum, and that's all good. And I'd like to thank everyone for the quick responses when we sent out the RSVPs, and it's always good. And I think it's even better because, as you all know, we forecast our meetings a year ahead of time. That way you can adjust your calendar so that hopefully, unless something unexpected occurs, we should not have any problems. So I'm just glad to see everyone here. I'd like to first start with a roll call. Who does it?
Would you like me to take that one?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. McFarland.
Present.
Mr. Downing.
Here.
Mr. Zawonka.
Here.
Mr. Hawkins.
Present.
Mr. Call.
Present.
Mr. Hill.
Here.
Mr. Brown.
Here.
Mr. Butler. And Mr. Meyer. Here.
Thank you. Thank you. And next we're going to have the minutes. The minutes have been submitted ahead of time. We're going to review the minutes. Has everyone had an opportunity to look at the minutes from March the 10th, 2017? And if you have, are there any additions or corrections?
I think a motion to approve as presented.
Thank you. Motion's been made and second. Do we do this by voice?
Sure.
Okay. While you're trying to
go ahead.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed or abstaining? The minutes have been accepted as submitted. The next on our agenda is a review of the past and second quarter financial reports. And I looked at those reports and I couldn't see anything that didn't look right. You know, I didn't see anything that just made my eyebrow go up. Did I miss anything, Karen?
No.
Could you give us a report, please?
Sure. If you look at the second page of the report, which has the hotel tax status report, goes sideways with in the tiny print that you might need. Cheaters. I'm getting close to that point. Total actual collections from the city towards the bottom, first quarter 2017, were $852,359. Second quarter, $1,052,322. And if you look at what they were in 16, they are increasing quite a bit. We did have some adjustments on the city side for both the first and second quarter. A big adjustment in the second quarter was for the second lien bond, we were required to keep a working capital reserve fund at the city to cover any shortfall to cover the debt service on the second lien bonds. Now the second lien bonds are no longer outstanding. Those have been paid off. What happened was the trustee recommended that we move that money over to the distribution account.
Okay.
So we moved $400,000, what was in reserve, into the distribution account. So my expectation is the waterfall will be larger this year than normal.
That's
why you see such a big discrepancy between the second quarter 2017 and if you jump up to the second quarter of 2016. Mm-hmm. And on the county side, TOT tax is also improving. First quarter was $1,793, and second quarter was $2,626,260. And then the next page shows the 2017 expenses towards the bottom. We're authorized by resolution 2017-2 to spend $65,000. We spent $54,449 to date. And that's basically for the auditor's fees and the officer liability insurance. The last page is just a disposition of funds of the distribution account and also the first lien fund and second lien debt service fund. And I wanted to kind of talk about the second lien debt service fund that kind of goes hand in hand with the reserve fund that the city used to have. The second lien debt service fund really is no longer necessary now that that debt service has been paid and those bonds have been refunded, paid in full. So what I plan to do, I've gotten direction from the trustee that they just need a letter from me requesting that that account be closed and that money be transferred. So what I'm proposing to do is transfer that money to the distribution account. It's $264,000. So I just wanted, we do not need a resolution in order to do that, but I just wanted to make everyone aware of that and make sure that there wasn't anyone with any objections to closing that account. It's really not necessary, so.
Okay. How much are we sending to the, transferring to the distribution?
It's $264,000.
Okay.
Or actually, it might be $264. I take that back.
There's right down there, yeah.
$264. It's a small amount of money, yeah.
Right.
I think it's just some interest that had been earned.
Okay. Does anyone have any question about that process? Do we need to vote on that?
No, I don't think so. No.
Okay. Just make sure the minutes reflect that.
Yes, that would be helpful, yeah.
Okay.
And that concludes the report.
All right. Okay, we've just had our financial report. Need a motion? Don't we need a motion to accept that? I'm trying to get between meetings. Some meetings we do and some we don't. Do we need a motion to accept our financial report?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Karen, very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Next, we have a state legislative update regarding the TOT Capital Project Grant. I'm glad this is on here because I had some questions about where we were with that. So you're gonna give that report, Jim?
Yeah, I can give a brief mm-hmm. update. So since we last met in March, the state passed its fiscal year budget. While they were in the process of passing that, there were a couple of bills brought on at different times that were intended to limit the way the county could use its TOT funds. So one bill was going to force the county to take any dollar collected over $6 million and redistribute that to all municipalities on a pro rata basis. A later attempt was to limit our TOT residual balance fund to $4 million and to prevent convention centers from expanding in Hamilton County. So we were fortunate enough that through our representatives and some of our board members and the community in general, to be able to get those items off of the budget bill. And so we're in good shape right now on that front. What this ultimately plays into is our residual account and the leftover dollars and some of the projects and things like that that we've been able to fund over the past couple of years. Anything that would have happened would have severely limited the county's ability to do anything in that realm, but it would also have impacted our abilities to do anything in terms of expansions to any of the convention centers in the county. One lesson that we did get from that process was sort of a need or a call to discuss our capital project accounts and those grants a little more frequently. And so we're trying to be a little more transparent on that. So we're going to, if there are updates, provide updates at the CFA meetings. We're also going to annually reach out to the communities to just remind them that this funding source is out there. And so just a brief update, since all of this happened, there was one inquiry, but that was several months ago, and no one's really followed up on that. So as of right now, in 2017, we have not had any applications for the TOT capital grant funding. So I'm happy to take any questions or field any comments on this issue. Or if Jeff or Judy wants to add anything to it, I know that they were intimately involved.
No, thanks, Jeff. It, just real quick, I think one of the things that also came up is that, Jeff, I think you framed it perfectly. I think one of the issues that also came up in the course of this that maybe wasn't quite well known by a lot of the communities. The communities that participate in the process on a routine basis understood, but some of the others didn't. A lot of this was fed by some communities, I think, that had talked with some state reps saying that the county had not been forthcoming with providing them grant funds, et cetera, in the past. And I think there's really a lack of knowledge out there generally on the fact that counties under the revised code are very restricted in terms of how we can use those dollars. I would love, in some ways, to be able to use those dollars to, for a lot of other purposes, general fund purposes, general economic development, those types of things. That's not the law in Ohio. In Ohio, the transient occupancy dollars have to be used specifically for projects that support the convention and visitor infrastructure, for debt service or operations and maintenance of convention centers. I think we've taken actually a very progressive stance on how we go about allocating those dollars, because we've made the argument that anything that furthers the convention and infrastructure fabric in the community ultimately helps with marketing and promotion of convention centers, because it lifts the entire tide of room nights and generates more revenue. That being said, if someone comes up to us and says we want to use this money for sidewalks, probably have a tough time making that argument. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of the storylines that have been sold to some of the legislators who were active in trying to put some of these things forward. So ultimately, I hope that we set the record straight on some of that. As Jeff said, I think we've acknowledged that we need to do a continued better job of getting out there in communities and getting them to understand the occupancy tax grants that do exist, their ability to apply for them, and help them understand what they can apply for and what they can't. As a little bit of an aside, one of the ironic things about one of the projects that was discussed with the legislature about that we didn't fund, I'm not going to be specific to the community, but a community came forward and asked for something that we felt in the transient occupancy tax we could not fund. We actually looked internally, found another restricted fund in the county that we could assist them with. Did. They got the project done, but still just didn't like the fact that the occupancy tax couldn't fund it directly. So,
Jim, do you remember that we contributed to the Blue Ash Conference Center for the Missouri?
I was going to ask that.
We have funded several capital grant applications from Blue Ash. So this conversation with the legislature was not spurred by Blue Ash. I can say it was from other communities.
I know where it came from.
But we have funded several capital applications from Blue Ash, and actually Judy and I just the other day met with Kelly Harrington and David Waltz, and again expressed the idea that we're open to receiving more. I think at this point in time, they're looking at what capital grants they would want to apply for. If there's anything on the docket right now that they would want to apply for, that they know that it's open. And we've been very clear about saying that from our perspective, Cooper Creek is a significant component of the convention and visitor meeting infrastructure of this community. We continue to entertain those applications. So yes, to answer your question, yes.
I think the key is that everybody understands, needs to understand if they don't already, that the funds are about self-sustaining here. Mm-hmm. We can keep it all in the same pot, recycle it, and make it better and bigger.
So. Exactly. That's exactly right.
How much is in the pool right now?
Jeff, what do we have in there right now?
It's in the range of 5 to 6 million after we receive the March distribution, but that number won't change until next winter.
March.
Yeah, next March. So,
is there still a component to pay back money?
In terms of whether we can use it to refinance debt, for them, or pay for the fees debt?
No, for municipalities that would access that money. That there's some aspect where they would pay that money back.
Oh, on a loan or something like that, as opposed to a grant? And we have not given these out as loans in the past, so the grant process is a grant process. We've not traditionally done them as loans.
I thought Springdale in a situation where money was going to be paid back upon sale of property.
Yeah, so, and I'll have to go back and look at that specific one. So that specific grant that we gave to Springdale for the demolition of the old Sheraton Hotel was financed partly with occupancy tax and partly with blight removal funds through the Community Development Block Grant program. So I think that was the reason for including something of that nature. I'll be honest, I don't remember how that got finalized into the agreement, whether the loan nature stayed in or not. I just can't remember.
Didn't the
Port Authority.
I don't know if the port was involved with that, but typically it's just through our capital grant process. There's through TOC, there's typically not a loan component to that. But I think that this project was different because it involves CDBG dollars as well.
So was that project in 2016 with Springdale? 2016, because I think the Blue Ash was in 2017, wasn't it?
Blue Ash was both 15 and 16 and 16. Springdale was also 16.
Okay.
Yeah, and to go a little bit further on that, we are currently putting together an economic development pool utilizing a lot of our CDBG dollars. And the Springdale project was a lead kind of example of that. And a lot of those economic development pool dollars are allocated, or we're hoping to allocate as loans. It will actually be, as you apply, you get a higher ranking if it's as a loan as opposed to a grant. So that's kind of where that fit in.
Gotcha.
So Jeff, in the future, do we have some steps that we're going to take as far as how we're going to be much more transparent to some of those communities that aren't really knowledgeable about the process, or do we just do a wait and see?
It's a great question, and we certainly won't do a wait and see. We want to be proactive on this, mm-hmm. and we've gone to a continually open enrolling grant cycle. It used to be that what was the deadline, Jeff, like October or August or something like that. We had communities coming out at different times of the year saying, oh, we missed it. So as part of the strategy for recognizing that people didn't really understand the timing and nature, you said, tell you what, come to us anytime. So if you miss it in August, it's a continually open cycle.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter when you hear about it. We're open for business as it relates to grants. Jeff and I have talked about how we go about making sure that at least on an annual basis we're getting notification out to communities that we're hitting the Municipal League, Township Association, that type of thing, giving it a prominent place on our website. We're working with the CDB, which has also done some advertising and helped us with getting this information out. So, yeah, we're going to continue to keep pressing that.
Okay.
It is stated very clearly on the on your website.
Yeah,
the application.
That's changed because it used to be somewhat buried, and now it's, I think, stated much more clearly.
So if anyone has a question, they can just go to the website, and if they need further clarification, there's a contact person that they can contact.
Yes, there is. I think Mr. Wetbach is the contact person that they'll get to.
And call me with questions.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I might just make one other point. I think it's fair to say you guys are doing a great job trying to get this information out there as broadly as possible. We should all just be eyes wide open that there are folks in the legislature who don't think the government should have anything to do with conventions, convention facilities, or all of the things that this board is involved in. And so at work here is not just transparency in what you do. At work here is some politics and some political opinion. And spending government money on convention facilities is not necessarily a good thing. So my comment for the board, speaking from the chamber's point of view, is that we will continue to be out there making it really clear that these facilities are important to our community. They want visitors and talent and growth to our region, and that's something that as a group we're going to have to continue to be aware that there are folks who don't necessarily agree with that. I think we're on the side of the angels there, I just would encourage the group as a whole to remember that it never hurts to talk about the value of having a robust convention economy.
Your point is so well taken, and what I take from your comments as well is that we need to realize that right now people may be sleeping, but we need to make sure that we don't sleep and let something come up under the rug, you know, and it's going to be back out in the forefront again. Yes, Dan.
Quentin, what did the final bill come for, moving the murals?
Oh.
And when do we pay that back? Because we guaranteed up to $700,000 to pay the city back.
Yeah.
And I think it's been under that.
Yeah, it's fine. It came in under budget, and we pay that back. it's paid back out of the waterfall. So the county and the city each respectively pay $93,750. It's paid back over, I think, a 5-year period. And I think we've made 2 payments to date on it. So there's 3 more years to pay.
And what's the total?
The total, you know what, I don't have that number with me. You have
to do the math real quick here.
People were estimating up to $2 million, and I think it came down to $1 million.
Yeah.
I know we came under what was estimated as far as budget.
Have you seen the murals?
Yes.
They are really fabulous.
It's a nice movie.
Yeah. It looks nice, because that was a boring side of the convention center. Anyway.
Yeah.
Pizzazz to it.
And I think the story of how that whole process, how they were moved from the airport here, and that is captured on one of the videos, and it would be, you know, that video is open for communities. I know we used the video once for a community in Springfield Township, and it was really, really, really awesome, that whole process.
Total was $937,000. $937,000?
So we're up for $700,000, is that right?
It's split between city share and county share.
Did the city pay something up for the city pay a portion up front? I can't even remember.
So we just guaranteed $700,000. Apparently, so the city would pay the difference.
Unless it's only four, maybe 4 years.
It's in writing somewhere.
Yeah, I didn't bring any of that with me, Dan.
Yeah, $750 is 4 years, so we
4 years. So we're just paying it over 4, so we only have 2 more payments to make then. I was thinking it was a 5-year payment.
That's a good point, Dan, and I think if we can make sure the minutes reflect that, and then if there's anything, any more update from the mural project, we can also bring that up in our meeting in December. But it's really an awesome, awesome opportunity for everyone if you can just go down and see it. But for me, just how that whole movement occurred was just phenomenal from my perspective. Have you seen that video, Dan?
No.
Oh, it's awesome. You should see it. You need to give him a copy of that. Okay, any other questions regarding the TOT capital project grant? Okay, this is a really special part of our meeting today, and it's recognition of Dan Meyer for the service that he has provided since he's been on this board. And before I read the proclamation, I just am so amazed. I wasn't here at the beginning, as Dan has been, and I didn't realize until today. Paul has been here from the beginning, and I don't know who else. Is there anyone else here?
Shortly thereafter.
So we have a lot of history in this room, as far as Dan and you guys and Paul and you as well. So it is. Dan has decided that he's going to, quote, retire, and he has my blessings, you know. I just hate to see him leave, because I know many times Dan has come from Florida up here for meetings and then gone back down. He's just so awesome. So, Paul, do you want to say anything before I read the
I think, you know, Danny probably remembers this too, for those of you who weren't on the board and weren't around for some of those initial kind of contentious meetings in the beginning. I think Dan was, you know, one of the driving forces to kind of bring this group together and calm the waters and get everybody on the same page. And that leadership played an important role in getting this group off and running. So, County owes you a note of thanks.
One thing to the benefit of what you're dealing with now, with the residuals, we set this up about the year 2002, when the convention center was being completed. And everything was being kicked in for the expenses. But with hotel occupancy coming in right after 9/11 at about 50%, we didn't do any TIF or anything like that. We just said, let's keep the hotel occupancy at about 52%. And it had been running at 60 or 62. Now, if we were planning on things improving, we wouldn't have all this residual. But I think that was, it could have gone either way. Mm-hmm. But it worked in our favor, and now we're able to take advantage of enhancing the convention opportunities for the city of Hamilton County. So I think, you know, it just, whether you're lucky or not, but I believe we're very fortunate to have this residual to deal with.
Well, Dan's very modest because a large part of it really was due to your leadership in the beginning. I mean, getting this group together, it was a number of different voices on the board at that time. So exactly. It was not an easy job, easy chore. So,
you want to share something for us about Dan?
Well, the calming of everything after the beginning, personality, dealing with people whose agenda may not have been like the rest of us. So Dan did a great job.
Well, I can tell you from my perspective, when I first came on the board, Dan welcomed me with open arms, and he also was a great person to train me and educate me the right way, you know, and also to make sure that my goals and my aspirations were in line with the objectives and goals of this CFA board, you know. And I just am so proud. His feet have been, you know, difficult for me to follow, but I do my best. And I know that if I have any questions, I can always call on him. He's just been awesome for me and for all of us new ones that came on board. And that, you know, you usually don't find a chairperson that open. And he could be very blunt at times as well, but he always was great. You know, I got where he came from because I'm somewhat like you as well. So,
Ms. McFarland, could I realize I'm not a board member, but I wrote the legislation to create the CFA and the bylaws and have been here since the beginning. Mr. Meyer was the first person I met with regard to the CFA, and all I can say is the entire county benefits from his wisdom and experience, years as a business leader in running this organization as well as others, and I consider him a friend after knowing him for these last 15 years.
Wow.
And I appreciate all he's done for the county, and I wish him well.
Madam Chair, just very briefly as well, I just wanted to say on behalf of every administrator specifically that has held this role at one time or another, I'm speaking on behalf of the county specifically, but I think the folks that have preceded us on the city side would echo as well, just to thank you, Dan, for, I know when I came into this process, Dan was instrumental in helping me understand the finer points of the relationships and the dynamics involved. I know he served in that same role for everybody who came before me on both the county and the city side, so I just wanted to be here today to thank you for that.
You're too kind. This couldn't have been done without the city and the county support. You really make things work. We just go along for the ride.
Gwen, I'd like to thank Dan on behalf of the city. He's been a city representative. He's done a fabulous job. And when I took over in this position, whenever I had a question, everybody said, call Dan Meyer. He'll know the answer. He knows his stuff inside and out. And he's, you know, what I've been told is what everyone is saying, is he was inspirational in making this all happen. So we appreciate your time and your dedication to this, Dan.
Anyone else? Well, I'm going to come around and read our proclamation.
This is exciting. And you know, I promise we'll call it occasional. So officially, you know how people don't like to do the whereas? I'm going to do all the whereas. It's not like there's two pages of them, okay? So then, proclamation from Hamilton County Convention Facility Authority Board. Recognizing you, Dan, for your services, whereas Dan Meyer has been a Convention Facilities Authority board member for 13 years. We think it's 13, is it 14?
Well, actually, yeah, officially it's 13. Okay. But Dan's been involved actually longer than that.
And more while you're instituting the mandatory retirement.
And whereas Dan was chosen as the first board chairman and served in that capacity for the majority of his time with the board, lifetime, but look what he's done. And whereas Dan was instrumental in setting policies that led to the expansion and renovation of the Duke Energy Convention Center, as well as promoting the CFS's participation in the Shareville Convention Center. And whereas Dan has provided invaluable advice and service and council, especially to me, to the many public and private officials who have been involved with the convention finance process. And whereas Dan is a leader who has demonstrated commitment, dedication, and a level of stewardship that led to the CFA to be recognized as a regional leader, now therefore be it proclaimed in celebration of his service on the Convention Facilities Authority Board, the board wishes to express its deepest appreciation to Dan for his years of service. And when we do this, it's like giving my flowers while I can see them, right? And be it further resolved that the Convention Facilities Authority Board wishes Dan and his family all the best during their retirement, passed and adopted on the 8th day of September in the year 2017. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, it's been a great group to work with, and it did get off a little bit rocky start questioning just our liability as well as what we were trying to accomplish. And I think without the cohesiveness of the board, a number of things that Sharon, Bill, Blue Ash, and so forth would not have gotten done. And whoever put in the protection that we had as far as keeping the government out of our pockets, that was a very smart move. And so I think that allowed us to be as gracious as we are to help improve and enhance the convention facility. And I am really pleased that we have it. And if we could only get a new hotel downtown, then I think a lot of the problems would be solved. But I'm very proud of what Sir Stack has done in that regard. And it's just very important to keep competitive. It's a tough field out there.
Can we take a photograph? I mean, can we put in? This man is awesome. So I think we need. Can we do that? Put in.
I have a phone camera here.
Oh, okay.
Where do you go?
As you go.
Go ahead.
Group picture. We'll do a group picture at the end.
Okay.
That's a good point. You're not gonna run away, are you?
No.
Okay. You have to do the ceremonial picture, though, presenting it to him.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It is.
Okay.
Sure, get behind that mom.
Thank you.
Is your home still okay in Florida?
Mm.
Your home still okay in Florida?
Yeah.
As of right now.
Oh, okay. To me, that was our most important agenda item today. Do we have any other business? Anyone have any other business? I just have one while you're thinking about it. A couple, I think it was last year, we talked about looking and developing some funding strategies, you know, for the CFA board, and that's something that we're still looking at. We're going to revisit that because, if you recall, we had formed a subcommittee that was going to work and look at what we can do as far as the Duke Energy and CVG is concerned as far as funding and opportunities for additional funding. So right now, we're going to continue to, I want to keep this on the agenda so perhaps we can look at it at the end of the year and see if there's a need or if there is not a need. And the other thing on our minutes from last year, which we're going to have this put on our agenda for December. Let me just bear with me while I look at my notes. There was a report, a resolution that we will have in December. I'm trying to look for that. Let me look at mine. I have to look at mine because I highlighted it. Here we go. It's a CFA approved closure of the second lien debt service. Did we do that?
Yeah. Well, that's what we just talked about. Yeah.
Okay.
In my report.
So
yeah.
we don't have to put this on the agenda for the December meeting because we've already accomplished that.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else have anything you want to discuss?
What's the status of any status report on the hotel next to the convention center down there? Where is that? Still in limbo? Anybody know?
I can comment a little bit. With regard to the convention center, there's a lot of what I would call modeling that's been done, both in terms of what it would look like to change and expand the center, as well as funding models for that. There's still more work to be done to try and decide, do we have the right solution for the right use of funds, source of funds. That's kind of what's swinging back and forth. I don't know if they can assign a deadline to when that will be done, but it's work in progress. Jeff are involved. Judy, got folks from the city, helping us work through that. So that continues to develop. I'm not sure that's different than any report we've heard in the last few meetings. Relative to the hotel, nothing really to report.
So there really haven't been any additional discussions for real on the Millennium, or where? The last meeting I recall was rather interesting. They seemed to be very active. Now it seems like it's kind of moving into a passive role.
Yeah, maybe Jeff Aluto can offer a comment on that.
I still think there was some chatter in the system, I'll put it that way, that they were no longer taking contracts or reservations after the end of the year.
They've been inconsistent on that. They have sort of opened things up and then they close things down and they're sort of cherry picking. It's become completely unreliable as a part of the solution set. Go ahead, Jim. I have another comment to offer.
Look, I was just going to ask, how is their occupancy and is their inventory? Are they renting the whole one side or all the available rooms or limited?
Yeah, their occupancy is probably around 30%. They are trying to use some of that inventory and things that are not group visits, but it's like staff, or airlines. They want overnight rooms for their crews, flight crews. So they would use up some of that inventory. That's an example of kind of sort of wholesale.
Very low rated.
Low experience, low cost utilization. But they are, the dilemma is it's hard to get anybody from a convention standpoint to consider that. The flip side of that is if they do, it creates all kinds of user experience issues. So mm-hmm. in terms of how we're thinking about 2018, yes, the issue is still a paramount issue for the community. At the CBB operational level, we're saying, we got to sell what we got. So how do we sell meetings and conventions that can fit into the current hotel footprint? And that might mean that we have to sell more actual events than perhaps we would with the ability to have a 100-room headquarters hotel to take on big, large peak room night kind of business. So, but we're ready to do that because that's the reality that we're facing and looking for new ways.
From the city's point of view, is there a chance of a public taking of that property?
I don't know. I've not been involved in any of those discussions, so I can't answer that.
So we're still kind of waiting to exhale, I guess.
There are some scenarios that consider that, but those scenarios aren't necessarily, that's not a clear path forward either in terms of timing and valuation. Yeah, it's viability. It's like, well, that's an idea. You don't have to happen.
They continue on their path. It sounds like the path of self-destruction on their own.
Absolutely.
They don't appear to be responsive to Western business. They closed the hotel in a similar situation. I think it's
St. Louis.
They just put a fence up and boarded it up and closed it.
Maybe it even behooves the city to go out and court other hoteliers out there that might want to step up and fill the void and approach them from that aspect, like for party aspect.
The hotel probably needs a lot of renovation.
It's unrenovatable.
It's beyond that.
Mm-hmm. It's unrenovatable. They might do something as a delayed, tactic or a stall tactic, but there's no amount of money that can bring it up to stand.
So, Mike, your organization's challenge now is that your peak room night convention is no longer, I think it was, 3,000? So is that, 700, 800 rooms out?
Yeah, we think about it, I think you're familiar with this, the committable rooms, and total inventory, and then so we get committable rooms, people that are willing to give us blocks of rooms. It's down to small. And that creates compression, which creates even more pressure on trying to bring in conventions, because the hotels recognize the compression creates transient opportunities. So it's a little bit of a, it's not an easy thing to work out of. And if I can assure you of one thing, there's a person we have talked to that I have talked to in any part of the industry or any of the city or county government that doesn't say, absolutely. We can do it and be done. There's no barrier that I see from our city, from our county, from any of our hotels. If we can do it, it'd be done. And so it's
happening. It's kind of like a ripple effect, because you're getting your newer hotels, yes, but they're going further and further out. Mm.
And they don't deliver.
When you would rather hit the bullseye.
They're not configurable. For the big groups that want to come in, they want to be in place, or close to being in place. A couple of hotels, fine. 6, 7.
Well, that kind of ties into Dan Meyer's dream. Let's get another hotel down, open up downtown. But the last thing, the worst thing we want is for them just to move out and board the darn thing up, and then we're stuck. I don't want us to be another St. Louis.
I don't think anybody does. The sort of rule of thumb issue with a new hotel is they don't want to build it across the street from the Millennium and be at risk of having their inventory undercut price-wise, and even though it's a lousy experience. So, there are ways that can be solved. That risk that a new hotel would take, can we solve some of that risk? Maybe.
Is there an estimated cost to raise it?
I don't know.
The cost to do what?
Raise it, tear it down.
Just in terms of if the strategy of trying to use third-party hotels that come in, yes, we're factoring that in.
Right, and so could we deliver the resources to do that? Could we reduce the risk of any kind of new development by buying the property? There's an awful lot of pathways that could potentially make sense. People in the industry and other parties, we go to our national conventions and international conventions, and they go, how are things going? What's up with the Millennium? It's kind of a well-known issue. Mm-hmm. And to some degree, we say, well, do you have any ideas? You talk to counterparts, do you have any ideas about the Millennium? And they're like, it's not really. It's a really, it's a conundrum.
What would be UBAS as this group? Maybe put this as a priority for next year, or bring different parties together for some discussion and look for some solutions. Maybe.
I think that's a very good idea. Number one, we have our meet. I was just sitting here toying with how critical it is that we stay updated on everything, and whatever we need to do to help maybe enhance that process, we need to do it. And I agree. Let's get a report. Right. Reach out. What can we do as the board to kind of help move this process forward? Do we need to create a subcommittee, or can we as a whole send some type of communication regarding our concerns regarding the future of our city and conventions? What do you suggest?
Can I think about that? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's thinking of alternative ways. I mean, there is no lack of motivation. Mm-hmm. There is no lack of agreement.
I see that, but I'm seeing it in pockets. Bring all those pockets together, combine our resources, so to speak, to a common goal, and I think we have a common goal.
Yes, we do, Lee. There. Absolutely.
Roger, does city or county have any leverage on the on doing something to force the issue?
Well, I think the city has more than the county does. Certainly, there are county, other city building codes that come into play. There are health codes that come into play. I mean, I've heard anecdotally, I don't have any actual information, but anecdotally talking to other people within the city, that the city has raised health concerns and that there are certain rooms or sections of the hotel that simply aren't used because of those health concerns. I think we've all believed that the city does have some leverage. It's just, is there enough political will to do anything about it?
Well, I kind of...
That's what leads us. So where do we... How do we get the political will to move this?
Well, it's not... elections this fall, so you've got to get through that.
Yeah. Not just political will. I mean, I feel your pain because I'm dealing with it on another issue, that if you've got a property owner that is shrewd enough and has enough financial resources to kind of wait you out, that's exactly what you're going to end up doing, and you're kind of in that boat. It's, you just can't take the property. I'm sure they're probably paying their tax bill or have some agreement with the county, so foreclosure's out, and, the property maintenance issues, they'll do just enough to keep it from being a problem. And, I feel your pain. I know where you're heading with this.
Well, Paul, I think you're right. What I've always heard is that the hotel owners simply are unwilling to engage in any kind of meaningful discussion to resolve the issue.
I'll trade you my mall for your hotel.
That's fine.
Okay, we can do that.
Mike, can I ask, as an organization, have they invested in other properties in the U.S. that are unlike the Millennium, meaning that they know how to run a good property, they're just choosing not to do it here?
I give sort of mixed answers to that question. They have invested in other properties that are in different portfolios that they own. And they have in a couple of places that I've heard about where they reinvested in the Millennium but then put a new brand on it. They're not investing in the Millennium brand in the United States.
The reason I ask is that if you look at Cincinnati, and we're talking about the success of occupancy and ADR and all the infrastructure changes that have happened in Cincinnati, you would think that would be an ideal place for them to, reinvest and get return versus letting the opportunity pass them, by, so to speak.
I guess my concern is if they're going to try and come in under under other systems, if they're going to develop other hotels, and it's going to be like a pseudo hotel in relationship to the Millennium, can we even allow that? I mean, if they're not in any way clearly abiding by our county and city rules, why would we allow them to even think about trying to build another hotel under their auspice, but under another name? Can we? So
no, that's not something that's being considered. And the idea of having another developer, a different company altogether, develop a hotel across the street, there's risks with that that developers are wary of. But is there a way to minimize that risk through some kind of county-city action? Maybe. That's still a pretty early on discussion, but I'm not sure it's developed very much.
Well, Roger, would an expansion of the convention center across, Elm Street to the Millennial site, would that be grounds for eminent domain?
That's a good question.
Without doing a whole lot of extra research, off the cuff, I would say yes.
Okay.
That's a good point.
Then there is a design option on the table that does it.
So can let's
but
put
again. If you pull that trigger,
right?
And you say we're going to do it, And then you have eminent domain isn't a two-week process. It's eight years of litigation and issues. So that has to be scoped out. I mean, do we really think that we can push those resources?
Although I will say in that regard, under the statutes in Ohio, eminent domain is supposed to take precedence over other litigation. And when the county acquired the property along the river for the stadiums, all of the litigation was accomplished in under a year.
That's good.
That's hopeful. Let's.
I will think about the question in terms of is there some
something that we
messaging, posture, communications that the CFA acting as a board could think would be helpful. I'll take some counsel
please
on that too and see
if I can
suggest something that you think would be good.
About a letter from the board to both the county and the city, bringing those all together sometime next year.
I would like to see us do that.
Who would be involved in that?
A letter from the board?
In terms of bringing that group together, what would you envision?
That would be us.
County commissioners.
Right.
And Jeff, from that perspective, and the city.
And then the city, right.
I know Mayor Cranley's, this is on his list, but he needs to get through an election, so.
Mm-hmm. I think that's. People understand that's part of the current short-term issue.
So let's look at and have this discussion in December. It'll be after November.
Yeah, I agree.
And then we can move forward. So let's make sure this is on our agenda for December, so that we can take time and discuss the direction that we're going. Because one of the things I wanted to bring up today is looking at what are some of the challenges that we have facing us for the next year and the next 5 years, and that one to me is top. That's one of our major challenges.
This project is holding up the expansion. We all know it. It's the elephant in the room, so I think it behooves us to kind of push it.
Mm-hmm. Then we have a new hotel, and I don't know, that's under development out on Red Bank Road. And when you were talking about sometimes other hotels may come in with a developer under disguise, I hope he's not one of those. But that seems to be a very progressive and attractive building that's going up. You know, it's what is it, the
Dolce Center?
Summit or the Alexander? What's the?
I don't know.
It's Summit or Alexander.
Well, my understanding is it's the Dolce Hotel.
That's right.
300 something rooms, and then they've built a conference center. It's attached to the MedPace. Is that the
yes?
Yeah. Yep.
That's funded.
Red Bank Center.
But are they? I don't even know if they're open yet, but they're close.
Yeah. They're. They are beginning to conduct hard hat tours, and the goal is, their estimated date of completion is 17, toward the end of 2018.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what it appears to be, if I'm thinking right. So, again.
The hotel open down there on the banks I think it's October. Is it
AC?
October.
Yeah, October.
Different name, I can't remember.
AC.
I was going to say CA, but okay. Yeah. That's all photographs. It looks great.
Marriott.
And we have a new hotel, and it slipped through me. I didn't get to the open house here at the Sheraton.
Oh, the Hyatt Place opened end of June. Mm-hmm. So they did a very soft opening next door. The owner is Rolling Hills Hospitality. It's the same owner who owns the downtown Holiday Inn, I think. Is it 7th? A newer
also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good owner, but they did a soft opening, so we didn't get to, light any fireworks off or anything. But the impact has been significant for our facility. Our pace for next year is up significantly, and we booked several conventions in July, which is our need time, that we could not have booked without the hotel. So we're in a similar situation on a much smaller scale, but we have our Millennium across the street.
yes.
And but the Hyatt Place, the Fairfield, our live-in partners, the hotel here at the exit, I'm drawing a blank.
It's
the goodness. Anyway, has been very helpful, and they're all, you know, coming together to play as we go out and attract different types of business for our facility. And the CVB and Barry Perks and the salespeople have been over, and we're working together to strategize for the future, and it's all good stuff.
The live-in, which is like an overflow, I went on a tour through there, and they have just dumped over millions of dollars into improving that, because, but they still need, I think, to get a new
flag. Yes.
Yeah, they need to, because there still needs to be some work on marketing. Yeah.
But they actually, nice. they put a $2 million into their property, and they're actually doing another expansion this year. They're going through the commission right now to get those approved. So they're doing a new pool, and they're trying to bring their lobby out front near the street. And they run a good hotel. It's just we can't get traction because of the lack of name and brand recognition. Mm-hmm. It's just not there.
They need to be rebranded. That's
and the corporate customers, which tend to be a significant portion of our business, that's what they want. So our friends like the Drury and the Hyatt Place, Fairfield, those work very well. But yeah, good things with the hotel opening, and hopefully, you know, we want another hotel as well. So that is our goal.
Just as a thought here, after listening to the conversation, it might be worthwhile to put together an economic viability of the convention center based upon the attractiveness of our hotel facilities and working with CVB as far as what does this mean to the long-term economic impact on downtown. And if there is none, then nobody's going to worry about it. But if you see something with a strong impact, it's a competitive world out there, and other cities are not standing by, and they're going to eat our lunch. And what that means is you start discounting everything and get lower occupancy, and you have a crisis. So if there's some way you can predict that, if you can't predict that, then, you know, just keep on meeting and talking about it.
That's something we can. I think that's a great
concern, Dan. Somebody needs that sense of urgency, and if there isn't any, don't worry about it. But I think there is.
I agree.
For the impact of the convention center on the economy of downtown.
I'm a newbie, but
and I wanted to introduce our newbie Judy. In fact, we have two new individuals here at the table today. We have Judy, and I was going to introduce Judy, and we have Mike. So go ahead, Judy.
So I can no longer say recently. So it's been about 5 weeks, but appointed the assistant county administrator. So I took Jeff's position when he was promoted. But I know that Mike, his steering committee group, has been, as he said, modeling, studying a lot of the scenarios and models that you are discussing this afternoon. So I think Mike is aware of the urgency in this Millennium Hotel. I hope I didn't say that a lot. But
we're glad you're here, and Judy comes with a lot of experience in this whole hotel, motel, convention facility. She's also experienced. She brings her experience from Westchester here to Hamilton County, so we're excited.
I'm humbled by you're so sweet.
That's the truth.
Community of 60,000 to 800,000. I'm not sure how much that experience is applicable, but thank
but
you.
But it's
you're
good.
Very sweet.
It's all good. It's all good. Okay.
If I can just add one thing.
Yes, Mike.
And in the spirit of recognizing the work this board has done, Dan has done, we're going to release next week our latest economic impact study. We do that with the Northern Kentucky Convention and Visitors Bureau of Regional Tourism Network. And that study is going to disclose the economic impact of visitor economy in Cincinnati is over $5 billion. There's no way we would have gotten to that number if we didn't have the convention center and the funds to promote the city and the facilities that we have. It's a terrific achievement. The last time we did the study was in 2014, I think. It was $4.4 billion. And so we're making some material progress in terms of the economic impact of the visitor economy, taxes it throws off, jobs it throws off, and the overall quality of life it supports. It's a tremendous, to answer your point, what I'm starting to say, if you had an economic sector in your city, I don't know, technology, that was throwing off $5 billion a year, would you pay attention to it? Yeah, you would pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. And we have a financial industry that throws off money. You start paying. So I think there's a, I think there is a need and an opportunity with this information. It's always kind of in there, but so this is part of the city and the county's future view of economic vitality. And we ought to be paying attention to it that way, not just this is like, yeah, it's hotels, those are nice. It's, in total, it's a big deal.
Mike, and that taps into what Lee, this is critical, this is important. So we know this, so what are we going to do about it? We need to move forward. And I think as you think about how you feel that we can do it and be more proactive in doing it, and as we're doing it, we'll be looking for your thoughts, and definitely in our December meeting, and be prepared, because I think something this critical may require that be the total agenda. There would be some things that we have to wrap up in December, but I think this would be a stimulus to get us started. We always want to be proactive, and I think we've been proactive but a little more reactive. Now we need to be a little more proactive and move forward.
Yeah, but by that time, you'll know who's the new mayor down there.
True.
Go from there.
Okay. Any other discussion? Before everyone leaves, we're gonna. I need an adjournment, someone to adjourn the meeting, but we need to do a group picture with Dan. So, next meeting is December the 1st here at the Sharonville Convention Center. Same time, and that's a Friday. And I need a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? None but the devil. He's not here. All right, let's get a group picture before we all get out of here. So what's the background? Would the screen be a okay background?
No,
could do it out there in the lobby.
Oh, yes. That would be perfect. Let's do the lobby. Everybody, we're going to meet out in the lobby.
Good morning. Yeah.
I'm coming from.
care.
Reginald Zeno. He's from. He's been around for about probably 5 or 6 years.
Okay. How old is he?
She's gonna make a whole. We finished. Everybody still down there?
Get
all dried out.